what I want to do is I want to, again, get to the mission statement of our church, which is we are here to rescue lives. We are here to restore relationships. And how we view God, how we have been able to experience God in our life, which is primarily, it's on us, the onus is on us, but then also our response to that is going to allow us to be rescued from the struggles that we're in, to be saved from this vicious cycle that we're in again and again and again. For example, 4 weeks ago we wrestled with this idea of why is it so hard to forgive? In Ephesians 4:32, we are told to be kind, we are told to be tender-hearted, and we are told that we must forgive. And I still believe that the lack of forgiveness is still epidemic. It's within our whole bodies. We would have just an infection throughout the whole body if we could use that metaphor. This lack of forgiveness, it destroys our own lives. You know, bitterness is that poison we take hoping it's going to kill someone else. But it doesn't. It destroys us. It destroys relationships. And it's just, it's terrible. It's terrible in so many ways because just the least little thing that you and I say or don't say, or we do or we forgot to do it, and then all of a sudden months worth of this stuff comes up, and before you know it, we're not really dealing with the present problem. We're fighting over what happened on Memorial Day. And it's just as ugly, 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 ugly. All right, so we talked about that 4 weeks ago. Is there anyone here willing to raise their hand saying there are times where I still find it hard to forgive people who hurt me? Okay, hands are going up. Now, how about the opposite? Is there anyone here that's willing to say by raising your hands, I'm finding it easier to forgive? Any hands going up? Good, because that's what we want to see. We're here again to be molded and shaped into the image of Christ. So I'm very glad I saw hands go up both first and second because, again, we're acknowledging it. Yes, this is still a struggle for me, but yes, it's not as great a struggle because this is not just a time of like a lecture or a sterile classroom academic setting. We're supposed to be changing our life into the image and to conform into the love of God. Most of us, again, still struggle with this difficult math problem, which is probably the greatest math problem in the universe, and it is what, guys? 70 times 7. Because, again, you and I know if we forgive them and let this go, being human beings, it's just going to happen again and again and again. So we're trying to seek to rescue lives, and I'm hoping that your life is being rescued from bitterness, that you are not going to be that bitter person who is sitting in later on in life in a retirement center or a healthcare facility and just is spewing out negativity left and right. Everything is rotten with the world, and we get to spend the latter years of our life just being a big old sourpuss. We can be rescued from that. 3 weeks ago, we wrestled with the question of how do I respond to conflicts? Do we hate conflicts? Do we run from conflicts? Do we just say or do whatever is needed to be said or done to get away from the conflict or to get out of the conflict? Or are we really seeing those conflicts as opportunities? Opportunities to glorify God, to grow spiritually, to get the log out of our own eye. Opportunities to restore that relationship as we go lovingly and confront them. And then probably the hardest of all is the reconciling of the relationship, where we again, volitionally, of our own free will, allow them back into our lives, knowing full well that there is a possibility that they're going to hurt us again. So how many of you maybe would say again by raising your hand, I'm struggling still a little bit with letting some people back into my life? Again, a few hands. But now on the opposite, how many of you are willing to say it's getting easier to let people back into my life? Maybe that one we need to work on just a little bit more so. Then we had a sermon on humility. We had a sermon on humility. Why is it so difficult for us to be esteeming the thoughts, the opinions, the wants, or the desires of others better than ourselves? Why is that? Usually, there are some times where someone's wants or desires over such silly little things, and really is paint. I mean, really, like how long-lasting is paint? You go down and buy another $30 gallon, and in a few hours you can have it painted again. But sometimes we are not willing to put the wants, the desires of someone else above us. And we really struggle with that, don't we? Now, how many of you can say, though, maybe it's getting easier to put the wants, the desires, opinions of someone else? But you know what? In the New Testament, we see as John the Baptist and as the Apostle Paul, John the Baptist said this. He said, listen, it needs to be less of me and it has to be more of Christ. John the Baptist actually said it this way. He says, he must increase, I must decrease. The Apostle Paul said, for to me to live is Christ. Think about that. For me to live is my job. For me to live is financial security. For me to live is my grandkids. Oh, that's fun. He doesn't say that. He says, for to me to live is Christ. And then to die is gain. Today what I want to do is I want to tie the last three sermons in kind of this little mini-series that we've been doing and tie it into just one question. And the one question is this. Do you love God? Do you love God? And I guess, you know, if we were to say, how many of you would raise your hand, say you love God? We'd all say, yes, we do love God emphatically. Of course we love God. So let's refine that question just a little bit with some other questions, shall we? And here, let's start it this way. Okay, so I love God. As we sang some of those songs, the love of God, as Romans says, is without length, depth, breadth, or height. The poetic writer says, if we could write the love of God on a scroll, the sky could not contain it. I know emphatically that Jesus loves me without hesitation. Okay? We know that, and now we love him in response. We love him because he first loved us. So we are loving him. We love God. God loves us. And we say, yes, we love God. Well, let's qualify that a little bit. Would you be able to say this as a true or false? True or false? My love for God empowers me to graciously, generously, and gladly forgive even those people that repeatedly sin against me. True or false? True or false? My love for God empowers me to go and do all that is within my power to reconcile the relationship. And I was talking to somebody here just before the service started, and they are really trying to do that, and they will have none of it. But they're at least making the effort. They're making that effort to reconcile it. And because of our love for God, even though they may not want to be reconciled, we at least make the attempt. Or as the prodigal son's father did, the boy knew he could always go back home. That was not a question. When he's fighting with the pigs for the food, he didn't say, boy, I wonder if Dad would let me back or not. He says, I'm going to arise. I'm going back home. He knew that door was open. So true or false, I do all within my power because of the love of God to reconcile relationships. Or how about this one, true or false? My love for God empowers me to view every relational conflict as an opportunity. So I don't run from it. I don't fight against it. No, I don't go looking for it. But when it comes, I embrace it. And I look for ways in which I can glorify God. I look for ways that I can get the log out of my eyes. I look for ways that I can lovingly, gentle, go and kind of confront them and try to restore them. And then I look for ways in which we can reconcile that relationship. That's coming out of 2 Corinthians 2, verse 8, where there was that sexual sin going on in the church in chapter 1 of 1 Corinthians, and Paul says, get him out of the church. And then the second letter he writes, he says, now go and restore him. Reaffirm your love for him. Rebuild that relationship again. Number four, my love for God empowers me to esteem the wants, desires, and opinions of other better than mine. Well, isn't there a third answer? My love for God empowers me to spend each day doing something for someone else. True or false? So we love God, but when we qualify it, maybe there's some areas that maybe we need to work on it a little bit. John Piper says the most taught character in the New Testament by either precept or example is love. At least 50 times in the New Testament, we are told to love. The second most taught character trait in the New Testament is humility. And I believe, as I agree with John Piper, that all the other Christian attributes and characteristics are based on humility and love. If we could have them in our lives, then we're going to be a very usable instrument that God could use. Although, as Piper says, and I didn't check on that, he says, most churches do not teach on humility. So here's some questions we need to ask this morning, okay? Number one, to what degree are we to love God? And that is a valid question. So those of you that are kind of adapt and turning to your Bibles, let's go to Matthew. Matthew chapter 22. Because a lawyer kind of asked Jesus this same question, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, about two-thirds of the way back of your Bible. Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, Matthew 22. To what degree now are we to love God? Matthew 22, verse 34. But when the Pharisees heard that he had silenced the Sadducees, they gathered together. Verse 35 of Matthew 22. Then one of them, a lawyer, asked him a question, testing him and saying, Teacher, which is the great commandment of the law? And then in verse 37, Jesus answers him and says, You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the first and great commandment, and the second is like unto it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. Now, this is kind of interesting. Verse 40, basically what he's saying is, if you guys want the cliff notes of the Old Testament, if you want the Reader's Digest condensed version of the Old Testament, the Old Testament is just basically two things, because he says on these the law and the prophets hang on. If you want just a really simple summary of the Old Testament, love God with all your heart, your soul, your mind. Love your neighbor as yourself. You're good to go. How much are we to love God? And you saw those three-letter words there. How much of your heart are you supposed to love God with there? All. How much of your soul? All. And how much of your mind? All. So I'm not going to ask how many of you do it. That would be a little depressing. Even in me, I don't know if I could get my hand out of my pocket. But today, in just the time remaining, I want you to honestly evaluate your love for God based on how generously, how graciously, and how gladly you do forgive. Because you're to love him with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind, which means you love him supremely and you become secondary. So if he tells me that I got to forgive Robin, I'm going to do it. Because I love God. And he's told me to do it, and I'm going to do it. We're going to have to evaluate how much we love God based on how gladly we view conflict. And maybe that's maybe not the right adjective there, but how do we view our conflict? Do we seize the opportunity that even though they could be meaning it for evil, which many times it is, God can still use it for good, and he can use it for good in my life, as I'll have an opportunity to glorify him even in the midst of the evil that's being dumped on me, that I could see my weaknesses, my anger, like, I am so upset. Well, why is that? Because they're not giving me my cup of coffee. And I just want my coffee. Is that too much to ask? I just want my... Whoa, what's going on with the coffee? You know, we can identify that, and I don't want to spend the rest of the time working through that. But again, just how generously, graciously, and gladly do you view others better than yourself? So today, as we go out of the room here in just a little bit, and we go to growth groups, then after growth groups, Robin wants Taco Bell, because John's, I guess, not here. And I want to go to Chick-fil-A. I guess I can do that because John's not here. Taco Bell or Chick-fil-A, who's going to win? All right, but you know what I'm saying? You know, what order are we going to run the errands? Who's going to run the errands? Who's going to let that crazy dog out again? Who's going to do that? And now, even being with John and Stephanie, with those kids, holy cow, 3 years old and like 19 or 20 months old, they are busy kids. Who's going to go get those kids again? Who's going to change that diaper again? Who's going to change those kids? Because grandpa wasn't much help. Hey, kids, let's go out and play. Oh, look at all the water. Soaking wet. Well, we get to change the kids again. Who's going to change the kids again? Well, it wasn't me, by the way. But you see what I'm saying? Now, we love God. Really? How much do you esteem the opinions, the ideas, the wants of other people better than yourself? If we really loved God with all our heart, soul, mind, then we would more easily let them have their way. Second question, because this is another one. What is love? You got to go back to 1 John 4 again. 1 John 4. The next question we have to ask ourselves is, what is love? And we've all heard the little ditty, love is a feeling that you feel, let's see, how does it say? Love is a feeling you feel that you've never felt before. Is that a good definition of love? Love is a feeling you feel that you've never felt before. Almost all people think that love is an emotion. And you and I, we all know that there's four different words in the Greek for love. You've got the erotic love, you've got the brotherly love, you've got the family love, and then you have the sacrificial love. It's that love that we do for people without any expectation of return. Some of you had the opportunity to demonstrate that kind of love yesterday when we helped Bobby and Sarah move in. You did it with expectation of what? What were you wanting to get out of it other than like an empty truck and hopefully not a bad back? But there was nothing we were wanting from it. We just did it for their benefit. There was no strings attached. We didn't want anything from it. But when you look at 1 John 4:8, it says this, "For he who does not love does not know God, because the last four words of verse 8 says, for God is love." What is love? God. How do we define love? God. God is love. Again, 1 John is defining love not as an emotion, but as a person. Love is not a what. Love is a who. Who? The Bible, and this is again, and this is where we try to develop a little bit as we started the song service. Biblical love is not just a singular one-way street. It's a two-way street. We do have the fact that God is love. And some of us, to be honest again, we do struggle with that a little bit when the bottom has fallen out, when the diagnosis or the test results have come back and they were not at all what we were hoping for, and we begin to struggle just a little bit of whether God is a loving God or not. But regardless of whether we struggle or not, that does not alter the fact that God is love. God just is not a loving person. God is love. He's the definition of love. God is love, and the fact is that that's where it starts. We love him because he first loved us. And again, I hope that you can very much identify with what I'm saying here, is that is a tremendously wonderful daily experience. That you and I know that we are loved by God. To know the extent of God's love, to know the intensity of God's love, it is truly a life-changing and a life-sustaining experience. Because it doesn't matter if my wife don't love me. It doesn't even matter if the dog don't like me because she's mad because we left her for most of the summer. God still loves me. And that's all that really matters. So to know the length, the depth, the breadth, the height of God's love, to know that nothing, as Romans 8, can separate me from the love of God is just a life-altering, life-sustaining experience. But now we have to twist it to the other side, the other direction of that two-way street. And that is that, do we really love God? Because if we believe that God is love, then our love for God will empower us and be the motivation for us to forgive one another as God has forgiven us. Our love for God will empower us and motivate us then to reconcile relationships. As Romans 12 says, as much that lies within you. And I know there's even some in this room where you are not able to truly reconcile the relationship because they're still being knuckleheads. But you still continue to let them know that the door is open. There's available there if you want to come. You know, it's because we love the Lord our God with all our heart, our soul, our strength, our mind. We then see conflicts as opportunities. We don't run from them. We don't do anything we can to escape them. We don't become like living at work because we don't want to go back to the old man or to the old woman because we know we're just going to get into it again. We don't do any of that stuff. We look at it as opportunities to glorify God, to get the log out, to go and restore and then reconcile. So as we kind of wrap up here, we got to ask another question or so, and that is then, what is it that we love more than God? And it's a question I have to ask because, to be honest, I am not the perfect epitome of forgiving. I am not the perfect example of looking at all of my conflicts as opportunities. I'm not the perfect example of always deferring to Robin because sometimes I get kind of bullheaded and stubborn and, well, I still want Chick-fil-A. I don't care if it's closed. So here's another question or so we have to ask. Who or what is your refuge? Books. You know, we just go into our books because we lose ourselves in the books and the world is just a blur. Or maybe it's work, computer games, or hobbies. You know, after a very hard day, you know, after in the midst of a conflict, we just want to go fishing, or we just want to go down to the shop. We just want to go out to the shed. We just want to go in our room and just pull out the crafts or whatever, and we can just lose ourselves for but just a few moments. You know, who or what is our rescuer? And the list goes on. There are so many idols that we worship. And I do want to show you one other time verse, and then we got to wrap it up. But go to Psalms. I want to show you something neat about Psalms. You know, we sometimes are very foolish in how we live our lives. And you're going to Psalm 115. And in Psalm 115, we're just going to have to read this because there's a danger with worshiping other things instead of God. And in Psalm 115, I'm going to begin in verse 2. Why should the Gentiles say, so where is their God? Psalm 115, verse 3. But our God is in heaven, and he does whatever he pleases. Their idols are silver and gold, the work of men's hands. They have mouths, but they do not speak. Eyes they have, but they do not see. They have ears, but they do not hear. Noses they have, but they do not smell. These are all some tangible objects that someone has carved out of wood or stone, some gold or silver. These are inanimate objects. These are statues that these people are worshiping, okay? Let's drop down to verse 8, though. And verse 8 is a verse that you're going to have to go home and ponder, okay? Because this is a powerful verse. Notice what verse 8 says under the inspiration of God. God says, those who make them are like them. And so everyone who trusts in them. See, these idols have a power to change us. Because it is a spiritual warfare, Ephesians 6 and other passages. But man, do we want to become people that have ears but do not hear, or eyes or do not see? Do we want to become deaf and dumb? But it says there in verse 8, that's kind of what happens as a result of it. So those who make them, well, they're like them. So who or what do we worship more than God? So what do you think you need to improve your relationship with God? Beloved, 1 John says, let us love one another. For love is of God, and everyone that is born of God. And then it goes on to say that God is love, and if we do not love God, well, then we're in trouble. So, where do you think you need to improve in your relationship with God? And here's what I'm trying to say. You have been, for the last 3 or 4 weeks, very frustrated in trying to live the Christian life. You've really been working on trying to forgive, but it is still very difficult. You've been working to try to see conflicts as opportunities, and it's still very difficult. You're trying kind of a little bit to allow that person back into your life, but that ain't going so well either. And for the last several weeks, you've really seen a frustration level increase in your life. You know what will get rid of that? Loving God. Loving God. Allowing God's love to embrace you. And then responding to that love of God by just let that love of God empower you and motivate you to do what he asks you to do. Since God is love, the one who has an intimate relationship with God will then be empowered to generously, graciously, and gladly forgive. One who loves God will be empowered to do all that is within our power to reconcile the relationships. The one who has this intimate, loving relationship with God will then be able to view conflicts as opportunities, to esteem the wants and the desires of others better than self, and will spend each day doing something for someone with no strings attached. So if you're in a vicious pattern, and you just can't seem to get out of it, God can rescue you. If you're in a hate-filled relationship, God can restore that. God can restore that. If you want to be more loving, be more knowledgeable about God. For one who does not love does not know God, for God is love. If there's some way that we can help you, please let us know.